and welcome. My name is Andrew, and this is Picture the Scene Podcast. We are a true crime podcast aiming to put you, the listener, at the scene of the crime. Now today, I'm by myself, due to the fact that we could not publish our original episode 13, so it means we're one episode short before Rachel returns from her maternity leave. So here I am by myself. But fear not, she will be back next week. And it also means this may be shorter than normal, because it's just me and no discussion. Now, we would always like a rating if possible. It cheers us up and it helps us grow. Or, if it's a really angry review, sometimes it makes me chuckle. I'd like to give a shout out to the gentleman who didn't hide the fact that he didn't like us in the review recently. Which is fair, not everyone will like everything. And I want to shout out to you because Podbean, who is also our host and where you'll listen on, tells us when people subscribe to us directly on Podbean. And I personally love the fact that you gave us such a negative review and then 5 minutes later you subscribe to us. So that either means that you love a bit of self-punishment or we won you over in those 5 minutes. Who knows? But thank you for the feedback anyway. And Rachel doesn't let me say things like that. So I thought I'd squeeze it in there while she's not here. So let's get straight into it, shall we? Now, if it's safe for you to do so, I'd like you to relax. Close your eyes and picture the scene. I'd like to take us back to the 25th of February, 2018. And today, we're heading off to Leicester, to the A47 Hinckley Road. The section we're going to is a busy road. It's got various shops, restaurants, takeaway venues, and it's interspersed with private accommodation too, both standalone and above the various commercial properties. We're going to around 7 in the evening on the 25th of February. It's a Sunday evening. And because it's February, it's already mostly dark already. The shops are still open, and the fast food places too, their windows light out onto the pavements in front of them. And with cars still travelling along the road quite frequently, but nowhere near as busy as you'd expect had it been a weekday. But actually, having said that, even for a Sunday, like footfall, like pedestrian wise, it was unusually quiet that evening. It was cold, it was roughly 3 or 4 degrees Celsius, which is around the 38 degree Fahrenheit mark. It'd been raining on and off sporadically throughout the day, but at this moment, at around 7:01 PM, it's dry but cold. Now, one of the stores on Hinckley Road, number 253, was Zabeka. It was a convenience store, which is a small Polish supermarket, and it was selling predominantly Polish-produced items, but not exclusively, and it was still open. With its mainly glass front, it would usually be beaming light out into the dark atmosphere, but its shutters were mostly closed. There was only a sliver of light, compared to normal, that was coming out from underneath the shutters. Now, next door to it on the shopping parade was a takeaway shop called TJ Kebab that was open, and it was helping illuminate the pavement outside of the two premises. Now, above the shop, there was a flat, and it was occupied by a family, so the lights from that residential home would be shining out into the night as well through their own windows. So inside the store, even though the shutter was mainly closed, it was still open, but there was no customers. Victoria Ileva, who worked in the store, was in the area of the counter, and she believed that the store was going to close early because it was a quiet evening, so she'd get to go home earlier. Now, towards the rear of the store, in an outdoor, like, stock area building, was Aram Kurd, who leased the shop and was in all respects the owner of the shop. So, everyone, it's 7:01 PM, it's a quiet evening. Victoria, who worked in the shop, had been given every indication by her boss, Aram, who was in the rear of the store, that he'd be closing soon. There was no customers in the store, when all of a sudden, boom, a massive explosion ripped through the store, causing it to virtually implode. The two floors above the shop collapsed in on themselves, and the entire section of that building just created a huge hole in the row of shops in that area. Buildings shook around them, windows shattered, CCTV cameras in the area would shake like someone had gotten a hold of them and shook them intentionally. The CCTV camera that was far enough away not to shake would record the explosion, and it happened so quickly, with clouds of dust and debris blowing out onto the A47 Hinckley Road, making that small area outside the store go from clear night visibility to just no visibility at all, just like a white, thick cloud. So Victoria would be killed instantly. And above the store lived a family, the Ragobier family, Jose and Mary, who were both 46 years old, along with their three teenage sons, Shane, who was 18, Sean, who was 17, and Scotty, well, Scott, but he likes to be called Scotty, and Scotty, who was 15 years old at the time. Jose, the father, was out at work at the time of the explosion, but the rest of his family, along with Shane's girlfriend, Leah Beth Reek, who was 18, the same age as Shane, they were in the two-story flat above the store. Now, they had no chance to escape, as the home collapsed in on itself, and it crashed into the store below. Mary, Shane, his partner Leah, and Sean, they would all be killed. Scotty, the youngest son, would be pulled from the wreckage and taken to hospital, but his injuries were not serious, and he recovered eventually from them. Aram Caird, the owner, managed to survive the blast, and as people came to the rescue, including the emergency services, he would tell people he was in the store that he didn't know what had happened and that he felt lucky he managed to escape the blast with his life. Now the next day, a national television channel would send their news team to interview him to find out what happened. Because no one knew what happened. It was just a random explosion and a shop disappeared. And here are a few snippets from the interview. I've only put a few snippets because it was 7 minutes long, but I will put the full interview up on our social medias, or at least at Instagram and Facebook as well, if you want to watch it. And if you're a Patreon supporter, I'll pop it up on Patreon as well.
Do you mind just telling me your full name?
So my name is Aram Kurt, and I live in Leicester almost 14 years. And I don't know how to explain about yesterday. I was with my staff, Victoria, and we was near the till. For the moment, I wanted to go to the backside to collect some beers to put in a fridge. And for the moment, I go to the store. I didn't reach the beer. And for, I don't know how happened, like big noise. And as long as I remember, I found myself up to that high and then to the floor. And for, I say, 2-3 minutes, I couldn't feel anything. I just managed to help to go out from the bricks, from the woods, everything. I saw the sky. And I just managed to go out. I go to outside. I sit down. I see people around me, like friends, people around me, and I saw everybody.
So what happened on that day? You're probably asking. You've just heard from Aram. He said he didn't know. But what we do know is that five people tragically lost their lives on that day. And just to clear this up though, this was a crime. This was not a tragic accident. This was not what some people call an act of God. This was an intentional crime. To understand exactly what happened, we first have to look at all the parties involved. The lessee, or de facto owner, as we'd all look to him as, was Aram Caird, who I just mentioned earlier, who you just heard from. He was 34 years old. He'd been in the UK around 14 years, and he had lived in Leicester for all of that time. He was close friends with Arkan Ali, who was 38 years old, and Arkan was in a long-term relationship of about 5 years or so with Victoria, the woman who died when the shop blew up. Now, Victoria was 22 years old at the time of her death. That'd make her 17 and Arkan 33 when the pair started dating. I'll leave that one with all you guys to decide if you think that's right or not. Now, a third man, Hawker Hassan, was close to all three of them. Now, Hawker was 33 years old, and he'd been friends with Arkan since they were children together when they used to live in Iraq before they went to the UK. Now, Hawker had also lived with Arkin and Victoria for a number of years in the UK, but he now lived on his own at the time of the explosion. In December of 2017, Aram took up the lease on the store and he opened up Zagba, Polish supermarket. Now, he did so with a lot of support and help from Arkin and his partner Victoria. And that was also why Victoria was working in the shop, to help Aram. Now, unfortunately for Aram, the store wasn't as popular as he'd expected or hoped it would be. And by the following month, January, it looked like it would be a struggle to make it a success. Because of this, in that January of 2018, a month before the explosion, he was looking at a way out of the business. And he came up with a plan with his three friends, Arkin, Hawker and Victoria, along with Aram. The plan they came up with was to obtain insurance on the shop and its contents, and then put a false claim in on insurance to recoup his losses so far, and to turn a profit while being able to walk away from the business and the lease. The value of the insurance policy was set at around £300,000, much, much more than the real value of the cost any claim would be if it was a genuine claim. Now, between them, they decided the best way to do so would be to set fire to the store, damage it in such a way that the business couldn't conceivably continue afterwards. The four friends set about researching on how to make an insurance claim and started preparing false records of the stock and inventory to be ready for an overly inflated insurance claim when the time came. So they put a lot of planning into this one, listeners. Even where to get the insurance from, they picked a broker in Oldham, some 2 to 2.5 hours driving away. The assumption that they chose Oldham is because they thought it'd be easier to make a claim with a distant broker rather than a local Leicester one. But that was never really proven as to why they chose Oldham, but it's an educated guess from the prosecution at the later trial, and it makes sense to me. Now, they got the insurance at the start of February. They made sure they complied with all the conditions of the insurance. They bought and installed an alarm system. They ordered fire extinguishers for the shop. And on the 22nd of February, again to comply with the insurance, they bought and installed smoke detectors for the shop. Now, this was 3 days before the explosion. On the same day that they installed the smoke detectors, they also bought and took to the shop 4 litres of white spirits, which shows that they were already putting into place their plan. CCTV, phone records and shop receipts would show that Aram, Arkin and Victoria were all involved in these activities. On the evening of the 22nd, Arkin would also be captured moving a CCTV camera that was at the rear of the shop or at the rear of the kebab shop next door, so it wouldn't show the majority of the back of the store. But he wasn't fully successful though. Now, 2 days later, the day before the explosion, they bought 26 litres of petrol from a service station in Leicester, filling up the petrol cans that they had. Now, once they had bought it, CCTV would show them driving to a street near to the store. Within a few minutes of pulling up onto the street, the petrol had been transferred to Aram's car, and once it had been transferred there, he then drove to the front of the store to make it look like he was just taking stock into the store, which was pretty normal for him to do. He'd usually drive up, park outside the front and carry it into the store. Now, both Aram and Hawker would take the petrol into the store with Arkin. He was with them as well, but he didn't carry the petrol in. Now, after this happened, Hawker would remain in the front of the store. He would look out while one of either Aram or Arkin would attempt again to move the CCTV camera at the back of the kebab shop next door. And then they both spent roughly an hour distributing the petrol, the white spirit, and some other flammable substance throughout the basement of the store. Mainly though, at the front of the basement, which was directly underneath the shop. So all in all, later investigation by fire investigators would show that they used 45 litres of petrol, several litres of barbecue fluid, and several litres of white spirit. Now they made sure the fluids were all mixed well together, and when you mix that particular combination, it causes a really intense and vicious fire. They then locked the basement and left the store. Now the following day, the day of the explosion, all four friends were in the shop until the start of the afternoon, when the three men, Aaron, Arkin and Hawker, they left Victoria to work in the shop while they went out to the city centre of Leicester. At 2:30 p.m, the three men entered a coffee shop, bought drinks and had a meeting to finalise plans for the fire, which was to take place later that evening. It was suggested and accepted by the jury and the judge during the trial, and I'm inclined to believe it as well, but you guys obviously let me know what you think, that they knew exactly what would happen. Not necessarily that there would be an explosion, but that the fire would be so intense enough that it would destroy the shop and spread quickly enough to trap and kill Victoria. Yeah, you heard me right, to kill Victoria. This was so that they wouldn't have to give her a share of the money from the insurance company when they got the money from the insurance company. So just imagine that, people, deciding to take her life just so they could get roughly an extra £25,000 each. And is that the value of a life these days? £75,000? Is it really? So you have to remember that they intentionally put the flammable mixture in a front basement and a side corridor so it'd impact the shop, but left it largely clear at the back for the person who was setting the fire to escape without injury. So this was clearly intentional. And they had planned not to tell Victoria that the fire was being lit. And they'd also planned to make sure that she wouldn't have her phone with her so she couldn't call for help, just to make sure that she did die in the fire. So the three men returned to the area, parking a few streets away from the store at around 5:30 p.m. that evening, so roughly an hour and a half before it blew up. And with Aaron getting out of the car by himself, he went into the store and Arkin and Hawker stayed inside the car. Now, at 6:15, roughly, I assumed to check on them and confirm what was happening was really going to happen. But we don't know for certain why. But Aaron returned to the car to speak to the two men before going back in the store. At around 6:26 p.m, so 11 minutes after Aaron went to the car and some 35 minutes before the explosion, Arkin left the car. He entered the shop via the rear of the property so Victoria wouldn't detect that he was there, and he went into the basement to prepare for the fire. So when he did this, Aaron was making sure that he was distracting Victoria in the shop so that she wouldn't notice Arkin had entered from the rear. During this time, Arkin and Aaron, they were in regular contact by phone with each other, by messenger, so that Aaron would know how the preparations were going and when the fire was actually lit to make sure that he wasn't in the danger zone. At 6:53 p.m, Arkin had lit the fire and he attempted to leave the store by the back entrance. Now you have to remember that Victoria was Arkin's long-term girlfriend of 5 years. They lived together. So the reason, yeah, he didn't want Victoria to know that he'd lit the fire being in the store. The reason Arkin didn't leave by the back, he only attempted to, was because when he was about to leave, Shane Ragobier and his girlfriend Leia, two of the other victims, remember, in the explosion, they pulled up at the rear of the store in their car and he didn't want to be seen by them. So he moved back into the rear of the store. Now all this was caught on CCTV. This is not a guess. So this shows clearly that he knew there was at least two other people in the home above the shop. Now, a minute later, he called Victoria's phone, knowing by now that Aaron had her phone already, so he'd be speaking with him, not Victoria. Now, as soon as the call ended, Arkin left the store and went back to the car where Hawker was, and Hawker was waiting to drive them away, which he did, and they went to the nearby town of Coventry far from the scene of the crime. Now, this all may seem like conjecture, but we know the majority of this from interview and phone evidence. Especially, we know that they didn't want Victoria to know the fire was being lit, so Arkham wouldn't have phoned her at the moment he set the fire, so he must have known that Aaron already had her phone. So now we get back to the explosion. We know that it happened at 7:01 p.m. because we have CCTV, and we also know that Aaron was in the outside building at this time, a building that was not above the basement, so he knew he'd be safe. Victoria was directly above where the fire had been lit. So when he did leave after the explosion, this is Aaron, he didn't leave as you'd expect a person to do fleeing an explosion if they weren't hiding anything. He did so by jumping over a wall and leaving via the back entrance of a neighbouring property. Aaron was then caught on camera leaving, but then he came back to the back of the building, like in the street behind the buildings, and CCTV caught him crouching and just waiting. And then after he had crouched and waited, he then made his way to the front of the building and he acted like he had been in the building all along, but he had escaped. So remember the clip I played earlier? And also, after you've listened, go back and watch the interview. He made that up on social medias. You'll be able to see him lying as he told his story. You'll be able to see him say where he was in the building and why he happened to have Victoria's phone on him. You can also hear him say that he didn't really know her at all, that she'd only started working in the shop a few days before. Also, Arkin and Hawker, while they did drive to Coventry after the explosion, they actually left just after the explosion, and they turned right onto Hinckley Road, the road where the front of the store was, so they would have seen the devastation caused by the explosion, and they would have heard it. Yet, if they were innocent, not one of them tried to call Victoria, knowing that she was in the shop. You got to remember, Arkin, her long-term partner, didn't even bother trying to contact her at all after that moment. From the moment he left the store into the moment he was arrested, he didn't try and contact her once. If he didn't know what was going to happen, why would he not try and find out if she was safe? Sorry about all this detail coming up. I'm going to give it because I think it's important. But if you don't hear descriptions of death, skip forward 30 seconds or so you don't have to. So skip now. When the explosion happened, what happened was they call it a pancake collapse of the building. So that basically means the top floor gave way first and then it fell onto the one below and so forth until all the floors were in the basement, basically. Now, Victoria had the first and second floor fall on her, fractured her pelvis and her spine as her own floor fell into the basement. And now she was crushed to death. Her official cause of death was that she suffocated because the weight of the building on top of her meant that she couldn't breathe. Now let's think about that poor family who was in the two-story flat above the shop. Mary, along with her sons Shane, Sean and Scott, or Scotty, remember? Along with Shane's partner Leia, they fell with the building as it collapsed into the basement. They were trapped and they had no chance of survival. Now, it's a miracle, actually, that Scotty managed to be found and survived, and that we have to be really thankful for. Mary, her two sons, and Leia were attempted to be rescued from the carnage of the explosion, but it just couldn't be done. They couldn't be saved. They died either from smoking inhalation, or suffocating like Victoria, or from being burnt alive. Sorry, there's no sugarcoating that here. All five people that died in the explosion, it would have been a very painful death and it would have not been quick at all. So a passerby, Thomas Lindrop, who happened to be walking past the shop when it exploded, he also and to be rescued from the collapsed door wreckage. He suffered a traumatic brain injury, fractures to both his skull and his face. His pelvis was fractured, and both the top and bottom of his spine was fractured as well. And his life was changed for the worse, forever. Now, I don't want to spend any more time on the horrible people that caused the fire. So I'm going to cut the trial into just a few sentences. The three of them admitted they wanted to set the fire to get the insurance money, but not that they knew Victoria would be injured or that there was anyone in the flat above. They basically claimed that they expected the fire to remain in the basement alone and not to cause the damage they did. Now, it was argued because of the evidence in the court and the amount of substance that they used, the amount of liquid that they used, along with closing the shutter and taking Victoria's phone away from her and then not letting Victoria know that they were setting a fire, along with some other phone evidence that was circumstantial, that they knew that she would die. It was also argued that at least Aram and Arkan knew that there were people above the shop because Arkan saw Shane and Leia enter the building and he was on the phone to Aram, so he would have told him as well. The only slight deviation from their stories was that Hawker claimed it was Aram and Arkan who had planned to kill Victoria and that he didn't have a clue. Now again, trying to push the blame on shows, I think, that all three of them knew. Now, they would all be found guilty of murder, with Aram and Arkan receiving a life sentence with a minimum term of 38 years, and Hawker would get a minimum term of 33 years. So that's the scum mentioned and now put to one side. So let's look at the poor victims in all of this. Mary, her husband Jose, who was at work at the time, their three sons Shane, Sean and Scotty, along with Shane's partner Leia. Leia didn't deserve to die or have their lives changed forever. Now Jose and Mary had been married for 22 years, originally moving from Mauritius to have a better life for their family in the UK. They worked hard. For a long time, they had two jobs each so that they could provide for their family and give them everything that they wanted. An example would be they always made sure that their sons had the latest football kits of the football teams that they supported. And they worked hard to make sure their sons had a good life. Now, after the explosion and the deaths, Jose spoke about the men being evil, that they were emotionless after the facts. He said that it was the first time in his life that he had ever felt hate, and he now felt hate towards these three men, and he always would. He said that he now felt powerless and devastated. Shane's girlfriend Leia was only 18, and she was already showing signs that she'd be a kind and caring member of society. She had dreams to become a palliative nurse, helping those who were dying in the last moments. She was preparing to start an adult nursing course at university and was already volunteering in her own time and with no payment at all at a local hospice. Now, Leia's sister Molly would say this about her. She was an amazing, inspirational young lady who had only turned 18 last July. She was just starting out on her life adventure. In her 18 too short but wonderful years, she made a lasting impression on everyone lucky enough to know her. We miss her terribly. Every second of every day, we carry the pain of losing Leia. She has left a Leia-shaped hole in our hearts that nothing will ever fill. She was too special for anyone that didn't know her to fully understand the impact her death has had on so many. And then there was Victoria. Yes, she was conspiring to commit fraud, but she wasn't conspiring to commit murder. She didn't deserve to die. Her mother, Natalia, was having to deal with the loss of her daughter. but also the guilt of her part in the plan for the fire originally. Now, she would actually apologise on behalf of her daughter to the two families that were impacted by the deaths. And she would also say this: "I could have stopped her from going ahead and prevented this tragedy. I feel I failed as a mother to protect my child. My thoughts again go out to the families of the four wholly innocent victims. Their loss must be indescribable." So, there we have it, everyone. A horrible crime committed out of pure greed. Men who didn't want to work for their money, simply was just greedy. Jose, the husband of Mary and the father to his dead sons, he put it perfectly when he said he hated them, that both him and his wife worked two jobs to provide everything that the family needed just to get ahead, yet these men were not willing to work for the money, so they decided to kill. So I usually, at the end, ask Rachel her thoughts, simply because she wants me to. No, it's not to be patronising. I know we've had feedback that it sounds patronising. It's not meant to be. And it gives her a natural prompt to know when to say her own wrap-up if she wants to. So that's the only reason why I do it, because she wants me to do it. But I can't do that today. So please do tell me your own thoughts in whatever way that you want to. So this has been Season 4, Episode 14, called The Explosion. And if it's safe for you to do so, I'd like to relax. Close your eyes and picture the scene. At what point exactly can it become a good idea to take a life? And how much is a life worth? I'm going to leave those questions with you. And thank you all, and Rachel will be back next week.